Welcome to A Matter of Insurance, presented by the New Hampshire Insurance Department. Have insurance questions or concerns? Contact your Consumer Services Division at 1-800-852-3416 or by visiting nh.gov/insurance. I'm your host, AJ Kierstead. Interagency collaboration is a priority for the state of New Hampshire, and one office the New Hampshire Insurance Department gets to work regularly with is the New Hampshire Secretary of State's office. Today, I'm joined by two attorneys from that office, as well as the Insurance Department's Enforcement Council. So let's go around the table and have you each introduce yourselves and what your role is with your respective department.
I'm Jeffrey Spill, Deputy Director in charge of Enforcement. Actually, the job is multifaceted. I not only field complaints from investors, but we also generate our own cases. So if we see an area of securities law that's been broken, if we have a question as to whether or not the law has been broken, the statute allows us to make inquiries. So we can subpoena, we can ask people to give testimony under oath, and we can start an investigation from scratch and build the case and take as much time as we want because there's no limitation on the timing. Once we bring the case, if we decide that there's an enforcement action there, I would actually litigate the case. So there's the investigative part of it, there's the litigation part of it, and then some people represent themselves, so the issues don't get as complex, but when you have a defense attorney on the other side, the issues, the litigation issues can get complex. We're here before a hearing examiner that makes the decision. You can do a motion practice, there's motions to dismiss, there's rulings on evidentiary matters, there's exhibits, there's people that we bring in for testimony. That aspect of it can be quite lengthy and complex, but that in a nutshell is what I'm responsible for.
My name is Eric Forcier, and I'm a Deputy Secretary with the New Hampshire Bureau of Securities Regulation. I help run the Bureau. I've been with the Bureau for about 14 years, and I cut my teeth, so to speak, as an enforcement lawyer, working alongside my mentor, Jeff. And for the past 14 years, I've learned a lot from Jeff, and we together have brought a lot of enforcement matters. So I primarily worked in enforcement for the past 14 years and have had a number of collaborations with other regulators, including the insurance department. So I'm happy to be here today. Thanks for the invite. I look forward to getting into the meat of things.
My name is Josh Hilliard. I'm the Compliance and Enforcement Counsel here at the New Hampshire Insurance Department, and I like to tell people I think I have the best job here. Much like Jeff does, I get to investigate any concerns that either consumers bring to us or others in the industry bring to us, specifically as it relates to insurance, either insurance agents or insurance carriers. And if we believe there may be a violation of law, I get to work with the team here to investigate it, and much like Jeff does, take administrative action. And that involves motion practice, it involves bringing evidence before a hearing officer, and getting hopefully a favorable ruling that enacts some sort of penalty against any entity we believe have violated New Hampshire's insurance law.
So most people think of the Secretary of State when election season comes around. We have first in the nation primary here, but there are many aspects that the Secretary of State's office deals with. I mean, specifically with securities regulation, what are things that you are looking out for? We will dive into some specific examples, but big picture, what does that look like?
Well, you said it, AJ, so I'm going to put a plug in. The first in the nation New Hampshire primary is right around the corner. So that is a big facet of the Secretary of State's office. Our office is a part of the Secretary of State's office, one of the several divisions. I'll let Jeff get into the details of securities, but I'll just give you an overview of how securities fits within the Secretary of State's office. So the Secretary of State's office has a number of divisions below it. Elections, obviously, is a very important one, but equally important are the other divisions that get less fanfare, if you will. So the Securities Bureau, the Corporation Division, the Archives, Records, and Management, Vital Records, and a number of other administrative functions that we serve. But those are the major functions. UCC is another one. So we have a number of different functions, and securities fits within them. But Jeff, if you could give a better overview of what the Securities Bureau does, I would appreciate it.
Sure. The people that sell securities for others are called brokers, and the firms they work for are called broker-dealers. We license all of that. Individuals that give investment advice, that's like a separate part of the securities industry. They give advice for compensation. We regulate that. We license those people. We actually interact with a lot of different agencies because securities law is multi-leveled. It's not only state law, but it's federal law. And the way Congress set it up for the federal counterparts is there's the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is a government agency, but there's also what's called a self-regulatory organization, and that's FINRA. So primarily the industry regulates itself, and it has very heavy compliance, but when the compliance breaks down or when there's new issues that need to be addressed, the regulators step in. We work with a lot of other agencies. We license the entities. We license the agents. We take enforcement action when there's a lack of compliance. And as Josh will probably get into, there's just a myriad of rules that they have to follow because you're working with somebody else's money. And the safeguards have to be put in place for somebody else's money. And the conduct is heavily regulated of these individuals that have access and control over other people's money. So there's a whole host of rules that have to be enforced. There's a body of statutory law that has to be enforced. Another aspect of the securities industry we regulate is the issuance of securities. So that's completely apart from the sales aspect of it. Firms that issue securities, either their own securities or they are a underwriter, if you will, for somebody else's securities, we regulate that. They have to be registered or there has to be an exemption from registration, and we police that. And there's another aspect of enforcement called disclosure. So when you sell securities, you have to comply with disclosure. You have to have detailed description of what the firm does and what the security represents. And there's just a whole list of different topics that you have to cover in disclosure. And when that breaks down, when there's insufficient disclosure or when there's a lack of disclosure, misrepresentation in the disclosure, we step in. So we police the way in which the securities are put out there to the public. If it's a public offering, we also regulate securities that are not a public offering. They're sold privately, not what they call over-the-counter. When you hear the term over-the-counter, that means it's sold on an exchange of some sort. But securities that are not sold over-the-counter are considered what's called private placement. And that has a whole other body of rules and regulations that we also police.
And AJ, the only thing I'll add to that is that we also have an examination function where we have a couple of examiners that will be in the field every week examining on a no-announce basis our licensees. And we have an investor education part of our office that we're very proud of. We rolled it out last fall. And while we've always had an investor ed component to our office, we really revamped it. And Barry Glennon, our director of the Securities Bureau, is in charge of the investor ed. We have our own investor ed landing page. It's called InvestSmart. And so that's the brand of our investor ed program that we rolled out last fall that we're very proud of. It has its own landing page, its own website. We're continuing to put content on there. Maybe we'll put a link to this podcast on there. And there's other great educational materials that we're doing and have done. So I just want to put a plug in for that.
Yeah, definitely. I'll put in the episode description a link to that as well as the Maine Secretary of State's website if you want to learn more about what they're doing over there. Hey, and Josh, for me, I'm listening to these guys talk about what they do and very similar language when it comes to examinations and brokers and producers and all that sort of thing. But when it comes to regulation and enforcement, how does your work overlap with what they're doing? I mean, a lot of it seems like very much at the corporate end of things.
So the nice thing is I get to work with these guys pretty often because a lot of the individual or entities that we have regulatory overview on, they do as well because a lot of these agencies and individuals offer not only insurance, but will offer either investment advice or place their clients' monies in securities as part of, you know, a larger sort of retirement package or a larger sort of life planning package. And so we have individuals who maybe if they cross the line here with insurance and they come, you know, to into my office and I have some concerns, I reach out to these guys and go, hey, you guys license these individuals or this agency as well. Do you have any concerns? So we've worked alongside each other on a number of investigations, given that we have this overlapping jurisdiction over these individuals. And oftentimes, if there's a concern in terms of something they've done with insurance, it may be something that also they've done in terms of, let's say, misrepresentation. They've misrepresented the sale of some insurance product to a consumer. There may be concern that they've done the same thing on the securities angle as well. So because of that overlapping jurisdiction, we get to work alongside each other with more frequency than I guess I knew when I first came on board here at the insurance department. But it's been very fruitful and nice to work alongside them.
So we're not going to get into any specific cases. I highly suggest check out the press release pages on nh.gov/insurance or at sos.nh.gov for the Secretary of State's office. You'll definitely find all sorts of actions and such, especially on the legal pages on there. But let's talk about some hypotheticals. I think it'd be helpful for our audience to really understand what it is you're looking at. Where do you get the things you investigate, and what are some of the cases that you primarily work on?
Sure. I want to echo what Josh said about working with us. So Josh and I have regular communications, and as part of that, we tell each other what's happening in our offices to see if there's any overlap. So communication is key between our office, and Josh will call us regularly, or we'll call Josh, and we'll talk about cases that have popped up, status of pending cases, issues that we're seeing, et cetera. So finding those cases, those examples that you just asked us about, communication is key. And Josh said he was surprised that the level of overlap there might be with the securities office having started here. But I think a lot of it has to do with Josh's willingness to pick up the phone and call us. And we've had a great relationship with insurance in the past, but it's gotten even better with Josh. And Josh regularly contacts us and lets us know, hey, did you see this? I read this, or I heard about that, or we have a complaint against this. The fact that Josh and the insurance department thinks about us and has this in the back of their mind helps a lot. And we're not going to talk about specifics today, but offline, I could tell you very specific calls that Josh has given me that has resulted in cases that I would not have thought about had Josh not called. So just wanted to put a plug in, and thanks Josh and the insurance department for regularly picking up that phone, because the collaboration is key and the communication is an important part of that. And Josh clearly believes in that. So it's no secret that we enjoy working with the insurance department, and there is definitely a lot of overlap. Most of the professionals that are licensed with our office, a vast majority of them have insurance licenses as well. And so we want to know if they're misbehaving in the insurance world, and Josh wants to know if they're misbehaving in the securities world. And so our regular communication is key. AJ, I just had to say that, and I didn't answer your question. So why don't you go ahead and ask it again?
Yeah. I mean, what are some case examples, maybe? Like, is it malice or looking to steal money? I love our Fraud of the Month series on our YouTube channel. Got to give a plug here, too, also for our YouTube channel, because it's some pretty incredible stories of people committing insurance fraud, which is kind of another angle that we investigate here at the department. What are some case examples over for you guys?
So I jotted some things down prior to coming over here, without mentioning specific cases, instances where we've had overlapping jurisdiction. And by the way, I want to echo what Eric said about working with Josh. He's been great. You know, we've been on the phone regularly. He's interested in issues we have. I'm interested in issues he has. And we shared information. So without belaboring that too much, just wanted to say thanks to the New Hampshire Insurance Department as well. I wrote down a couple instances where we overlap. Licensed insurance producers sometimes sell securities when they're not familiar with the way that's supposed to work. Mm-hmm. And the reason why that happens, I think, is because insurance producers and securities agents alike wear different hats, and they try to make money in different ways. And we've had cases where insurance producers were selling securities unlicensed and not knowing how that industry worked, or at least giving the impression they didn't know how that industry worked, committed fraud by not giving proper disclosure. So it's very strict in our industry that when you sell a security, you have disclosure about what is representative of that security. Is it a stock of a company? What's the company doing? What's their financial picture like? Is it a promissory note, which is a security, where somebody gives somebody money in exchange for a promise to pay it back? They may be getting into that territory unwittingly or wittingly, but they have to comply with all the rules and regulations of the securities industry. Despite the fact that they may be a producer, an insurance producer, that's insufficient. They've crossed over into the securities world, and they have to be in compliance with all of that. Another instance where we've had issues is a variable annuity is an insurance product, but it has security subaccounts. So individuals have to be licensed to sell those subaccounts because there are securities in those subaccounts. And we have instances where they weren't appropriately licensed.
And maybe if I can jump in, Jeff, for our listeners, we can break down even a little more. So an annuity is something that you're going to purchase to hedge against outliving your savings. Rather than life insurance in case you die early, in case you live long, you buy an annuity to give you a regular payout throughout the years, in generally in retirement. And as Jeff explains, a variable annuity is going to have some aspect of it that varies with the investment products that underlay that annuity. And that's where you have that product that is both an insurance product and a securities product.
The other instance where it's crossed over is producers giving investment advice without being licensed. And the reason why that happens is there is a huge market out there for retirees wanting to secure their assets for retirement. And so there is a built-in ability to market to retirees insurance products because they're safer than securities. They have various guarantees built into them. They have various floors built into them such that the value of the annuity or insurance product doesn't drop below a certain threshold. There are certain death benefits and other benefits that come along with those products. So they're attractive to retirees. And so there's a temptation And there is actual instances that we've had where insurance producers advise people to liquidate securities accounts, get that money, and place it into an insurance product. And they have to be licensed to do that. They may think they're not crossing over. They may think they can do that, but they can't. As soon as you make a recommendation to move securities assets to an insurance product, that's giving investment advice. And it doesn't matter that they're not being paid for that advice. They're being paid for the insurance product. And the law says even an indirect compensation is sufficient to violate that law.
And let me jump in here, if I may, because this is a great learning opportunity for your listeners. It's the classic dinner seminar invitation. And it's this is a great point to talk about because it's not a bad thing. It happens, and it still happens today. But we have seen in our time examples of, it's no secret that we are an older state, that we are a wealthier state. We have a lot of retirees. It's no secret. And so one thing that we've seen over the years are, typically this is an insurance producer who will do an invitation to a number of seniors for a free dinner. Who doesn't want a free dinner? Well, not everything's free, but we see this often. It'll be a free dinner seminar at a very fancy restaurant, and it'll be an insurance producer providing a presentation as part of the free dinner where they are essentially scaring their attendees into thinking that the downside risk of the market is not something that they should have an appetite for at their age. I'm just giving an example here. But the dinner seminar approach is one where they get a large group into a fancy restaurant for a free dinner, usually retirees or near retiring, and they will sell them on the idea, as Jeff alluded to, a more safe investment. Now that you're nearing retirement age or you are of retirement age, this group would be presented with options from insurance companies, usually annuities, usually fixed annuities, sometimes variable annuities, and it'll be sold to this group as a guarantee. While it's certainly not a guarantee against risk of loss, there's always the creditworthiness of the insurance company when you enter into a contract with them. But that is a gray area, if you will, an area where we see insurance producers without a securities license opining on the downfall of the securities markets and the great benefit of insurance products in order to guard against the downside risk. And like Jeff said, if they get you to sell securities, if they advise on the sale of a securities portfolio to fund the annuity and get paid a commission for the sale of that annuity, that is in fact investment advice that requires a license under our law. And that is an overlap area that we continue to see.
Another one, and I know there's some active cases involving this, so we shouldn't get too in the weeds, but we see sometimes our insurance producers hawking some sort of crypto. And I know that really runs afoul, given the concerns over, you know, crypto being security and needing to be licensed and making sure that they're following all of securities laws while they're involved in those transactions. But again, you know, I think oftentimes it's not people who are necessarily out with malice in mind, but they're potentially, you know, working with clients, looking to try to put together some retirement portfolio that includes insurance, being an insurance producer, but then delving into these areas they don't have knowledge about, but then running afoul of securities law.
Just to touch upon something you brought up, Josh, which is really an important point. We've seen a rash of crypto cases, and the reason why it crosses over into the securities world is they securitize the crypto. The perpetrators, crypto itself is a currency, it's not a security, but they securitize it by offering interest, by setting up crypto accounts and paying people to set up those accounts, by promising profits, by promising interest on their money. We've had a rash of cases where individuals bought cryptocurrency, put it in an account on the promise of interest, promise of profit. And what those crypto firms are doing is they're taking that crypto and they're lending it to other people. I think FTX is a good example.
Yeah.
They may not be lending it to appropriate borrowers that can't afford to pay it back. And it's just instances like these where the crypto businesses get in trouble financially. And then the downfall of that is people who open their accounts lose their money. The way that happens is when they sign up to open up a crypto account, they actually lose possession of the crypto. It's no longer their asset. It's the asset of the company in a lot of instances. And so if the company goes bankrupt, the company goes down, they're not getting that money back. So you have to be very careful about what you sign up for when it comes to cryptocurrency.
Yeah, I guess that goes perfectly into kind of wrapping up here a little bit. I mean, what's the future for your bureau? I mean, whether it comes to reform and things like that, I'm assuming cryptocurrency, blockchain technologies and such are definitely going to be something that are going to be investigated in the future and ways to hopefully have a blueprint for how to handle these sorts of things. I mean, that's been the big issue with the whole, we talked about SBF right there with FTX and such. I mean, that's a prime example of where I think the future of legislation is probably going to go.
Sure. And the future of cryptocurrency is certainly unclear. It's definitely blockchain technology and cryptocurrency are very broad words. And there are all kinds of products that you could fit into the word cryptocurrency. But really, it comes down to the details of the product or whether or not it involves, like Jeff said, sometimes cryptocurrency can be used in such a way that creates a security. But the future, where we're used to seeing new products, whether you call it cryptocurrency, blockchain technology, other products, we have certain laws in place that capture new products called an investment contract under our law. And that is a definition of a security that is meant to encompass a lot of different things. And so we have that truth and tried test in New Hampshire law as to what is a security. When we look at the future, we're definitely looking at our legislature and seeing how they deal with cryptocurrencies. There's already an exemption passed in our law for cryptocurrency offerings that have a consumptive purpose. Getting a little technical here with you, AJ, into the weeds, but we do have a new exemption passed by our legislature that we are working with. So cryptocurrency is definitely the future, and we're definitely learning more and more about it every day. We're part of a national group called NASA, not the one that goes to the moon, but NASAA, the North American Securities Administrators Association. That's a collective group of securities regulators that gets together, and we are looking towards the future as a group too. And cryptocurrency is not going away, and new products coming out every day are not going away. And we'll continue to evolve and we'll continue to work with the industry. There's a delicate balance between investor protection and making sure disclosure, as Jeff talked about earlier today, is important, and investor protection is important, but also fostering business development and fair and even playing field raising of money in New Hampshire. So there's that balance between investor protection and government oversight and free markets. And so we play an important role there, but we recognize that there's two ends of that spectrum. And we are very much an investor protection agency. We'll continue to be that. We'll continue to sound the alarm on any questionable products or persons out there, while also fostering economic development in New Hampshire and recognizing the role that plays.
Any other closing thoughts by anyone?
Yeah, Josh from Insurance. I just say primarily towards the individuals that the two departments license, but also to the agencies, is recognize that, you know, your conduct in one field can certainly influence, you know, your licensure in the other. I can speak specifically as to insurance in that with our individuals, while our jurisdiction is over primarily, of course, their conduct selling, soliciting, or negotiating insurance products, our statute has language that clearly includes conduct in business, and it doesn't limit it to insurance business. So if here at the department, insurance department, we find as an insurance producer that you've been engaged in activities that is under the purview of securities, but is fraudulent, shows incompetence, or other triggers under our statute, we could find you in violation and take your license. And it's certainly not an automatic revocation of your license should you run afoul of securities law. We're going to look at every case that comes before us. But it's something to keep in mind, given the, you know, joint oversight of a lot of these individuals.
Great. Thank you so much to Deputy Secretary Eric Forcier and Deputy Director Jeffrey Spill, as well as our Enforcement Counsel Joshua Hilliard at the Insurance Department, for joining the show. If you ever have any insurance questions, or, hey, you don't know who to contact at the Secretary of State when it comes to anything like this, our Consumer Services Division is more than happy to assist at 1-800-852-3416, nh.gov/insurance at the top of the page, and definitely check out sos.nh.gov to be able to check out all the work they're doing over at the Secretary of State's office. Thank you, everyone, for joining today.